Welcome to Mobility at Microsoft Subject Matter Expert, or SME, Roundtable. I'm Sherry Bettine, and I'll be your host. We are the IT Showcase team, and we love to talk to you, our customers, about how Microsoft does IT. I'm here with some of our IT experts that work in the mobility solution space at Microsoft. This is your opportunity to ask direct questions of our SMEs and receive candid answers. You can start posting your questions now within the live Skype Q&A window, and I also have some of your questions that you've posted ahead of time in front of me, and I'll pull from both lists. We are going to make every effort in the next hour to answer all of your questions. However, if we don't get to them all, we'll stay behind in the studio and continue filming while answering your questions. And we'll post this video with the extended footage on our Microsoft.com/IT Showcase website. We're going to start out with our experts introducing themselves. So we'll start with Arun.
Thank you, Sherry. My name is Arun Maningal. My team in Microsoft is responsible for the strategy, design, and implementation of hyperscale services that power mobility experiences. I'm excited to be here fielding your questions and sharing insights and the efficiencies we have gained by moving on to the cloud.
Hi, I'm Eric Leonard. I'm in the Information Security and Risk Management organization, and our broader organization is responsible for defining the policies for devices attaching to our network, protecting, detecting, and responding to incidents.
And I guess that brings me up. I'm Jonathan Lewis. I'm the Senior Service Manager for the collaboration services here internally at Microsoft. So my team partners with the product group to run and manage Exchange, SharePoint, and Skype for Business, and obviously mobility and the cloud are key strategies for my team. So my team is responsible for actually moving us to the cloud.
Very good.
I'm Jeff Brock. I'm a senior service engineer on the identity and access management team. Our group is responsible for managing the single sign-on identity and Azure Active Directory for Microsoft.
Hi, I'm Mike DeGoyer. I'm in user experience services. We basically manage all the MDM services, all the system center integration at Microsoft. We kind of have a similar relationship to Jonathan in that we run our services as well as work with the product team on future direction, changes, et cetera, and run that service on a daily basis.
Great. Charlie. I'm Charlie Tran. I'm a program manager here at Microsoft. I'm in finance IT. We're the organization that's in charge of a lot of the apps that users use to approve their transactions, financial transactions, purchase orders, expenses every day. I'm in charge of an application, a mobile application within that space that is kind of like a hub of all these financial transactions and a lot of other types of approvals, about 100,000 transactions a month with from 8,000 unique users.
Okay, very good. Let's go to our first question. What is the future of Configuration Manager and Intune? Is that a mic question?
I think I'll take that one. The future, I like to explain to people, there's in the definition of mobility that I think let's just kind of level set people on. A lot of people think mobility is about mobile devices. They need to kind of change that level set. Mobility is not just about mobile devices. If you look at our environment, for example, out of the 80, 90,000 devices we have in our MDM infrastructure, we have 300,000 in System Center, 100,000, 90,000 in Intune. But we're seeing a shift in how mobility is managed across devices. So if you think about it, that shift is continually going in this direction. So while we have a huge on-prem number of devices, we have a huge number of Intune that are growing exponentially day by day. And in Windows 10, and in the future releases of Windows, that's going to be a much more easily accessible scenario. If you think about the easy connect scenarios that are coming in the new builds of Windows, that's going to really make MDM plus Intune, which is basically MDM plus Azure Active Directory, an easy scenario for all users to migrate toward. And so as a company, we're seeing a huge number of devices go that way. Now the product, it's really simple if you think about that direction. System Center is what you consider a huge 800, policy level kind of scenario where you can configure anything and do just about anything on the device because you have an agent on the device. Intune, on the other hand, we use the OMADM protocol, and it's a very lightweight, and we're trying to extend that to, say, the 800. But actually, what we're working with the product team is we're in the process of saying, on here we have System Center, which is 800 policies. Here we have MDM, which is much, much less and scalable across platforms. Let's take the best of breed, not just everything. We don't want everything from System Center over here. So what we want to do is bring that over here to MDM, and then have Intune actually guide that direction for multi-platform support. So whether you're on iOS, Android, Microsoft, a mobile device, a PC, it really doesn't matter. We want those consistent policies across those devices. And in the future, where we're going specifically, is within 3 years, we'll see that shift happen. So I think of it, you have a 3-to-1 split right now, right? 300 on System Center, 300,000. And you have basically 80 to 90,000 on Intune. Just imagine them swapping. And that's really what our environment is going to continually, that's the progression that we're on. Not only as a product, but as a company that we're headed toward.
Okay, great. Where does Microsoft see itself in 2 years managing mobile devices? What MDM or MAM will you embrace, and which will you abandon? Is that you again, Mike?
That's still me.
All right.
I can take part of that one. First, let me address the questions around MAM. People, because there's multiple flavors of MAM, people get a little like, well, which one are you going to use and how are you going to use it? If you think about it, really Microsoft, or at least us internally and as a company, what we're embracing is, how do we look at the data? So let's not just look at the device, let's look at the data, let's look at how the data is managed, where is the data is residing, the access to that data, the profile of the device managing that data or accessing that data. So there's all these variables that come into whether you use MAM or MDM. For most people, they just think MDM because really you manage the device, you can control what happens on the device, right? It's really easy. I can control mostly everything, depending on if you define it as corporate owned or if it's personal. And that helps set your boundaries. On the other hand, MAM is really looking at the application layer. And what we're seeing is really the applications haven't really caught up to that MAM integration. So the number of enlightened apps that are really taking advantage of the MAM capabilities haven't really caught up to what the product can do. And so we are seeing some enlightened apps that yes, you can use MAM policy, but it hasn't totally grown to where I think it could. The reality is I think we're going to end up in this microcosm where you'll have a MAM-like scenario. A good example is, let's say you have, in some of the new Windows 10 features coming, you have some policy-driven application layer stuff that is MAM-like. Like EDP is a good example where, yes, I can apply policy to a specific app. It's very much like MAM. It's not MAM really, but it's kind of a mobile application management. And it's at the application layer. Now, we're headed in that direction. But the reality is, for most devices, if you have PII, if you have corporate data on that device, you're going to want it managed. So for us internally, we're going to probably stick and head toward MDM. But there are some specific applications where, let's say you have a low business impact data application where you don't really care, like Charlie cares about his stuff because it's all HBI, right? He's finance. But you take some low stuff where you don't really care about the data as much.
Campus maps.
Campus maps, your menus in your cafeterias, a map that helps you see conference rooms or something.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with that? Does the device need to be enrolled to see that? No. You'd give that to anyone who walked through the door because it's readily available information. If you can use policy to distribute that and look at how it gets on devices and not have them enroll, but it be kind of a very light touch, anyone can access it from an application layer, why not? So hopefully that answered the question, but.
That gives us a little bit of a feel on what's coming.
Yeah.
Okay, great. What, I think this next question goes to Eric. What compliance health policy do you use to enforce for conditional access to your resources?
Okay. maybe I should talk a little bit about what conditional access is and what the promise of conditional access.
That's a good idea.
We're kind of in a journey right now of being able to enforce access to our corporate resources through this idea of conditional access. And what that means is we're able to establish a policy with Intune and then also with Azure Active Directory. And those policies, whether or not the device is compliant, will be populated into the directory. And then when you access, let's say, SharePoint or Exchange Online, you'll be able to be granted or denied access based on your level of compliance. And some of the things
in what way? So device, like whether it's my phone or my...
So some of the things that we're checking for, I mean, we push a basic policy using Intune to enforce things like a PIN policy, whether or not you should have a certain length of PIN with a certain complexity to lock out your handset.
And that's for corporate-owned assets.
For any...
That's for any device.
Any device.
So
any
even
device
my personal phone. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So we have uniform policy that we enforce for any Intune joined device. And that could be personal owned or it could be, you know, corporate if they decide
to. If I want to get to corporate assets, I have to adhere to this policy.
Yeah, exactly. You first need to be managed, and this policy, a PIN policy, an encryption policy, would be enforced on your system. And that way, you are then granted access, using conditional access, to mail and SharePoint. So those are, and we also will...
And conditional based on what? If I'm domain joined, if I'm not domain joined, or what are the conditional aspects of it?
So it's conditional on if you are Intune joined and whether you know adhere to the policy that Intune is.
So here's a good example is encryption for a lot of people. So we require encryption. We set the policy on every device that joins Intune. If you're an iOS device, if you're a PC, it doesn't matter. We set the encryption flag. Now there's some challenges with that. Being this is an open forum, we can talk about some of those challenges. If you think about from a PC perspective, a lot of people think about, oh, encryption is just turn it on. Well, what happens when the guy goes down to Best Buy and purchases a non-TPM device and it's not supported, and what do you do with that? Mm-hmm. So we're actually working with a product team right now about how do you take OMADM, for example, and start using that as the encryption standard rather than the TPM-based. Now, we want TPM. We absolutely, that is our requirement, but the reality is in a BYOD scenario, we know that's not going to be the case, right? So if you're coming into access resources like Eric talked about, and we have Intune policy that says we require encryption, the condition is we require encryption. The access is you're going to get access to our CorpNet and anything on CorpNet. But if you're not encrypted, you can't do anything.
You deny me.
We deny you. Now, there are some challenges like with Android devices, for example. We can set the policy, but we can't enforce it. So this is one of the challenges of cart before the horse that we see as an IT organization is we don't control every platform. So even though we are Microsoft, we abide by Android's policies, we abide by iOS policies. If iOS or anyone comes out with a new change and it changes the encryption weight on a device, then we have to react with that with our products and Intune and with our services. So even us internally, we have to actually take that and make those changes internally to say, what do we do with, say, a flavor that isn't compatible? Do we, say, give conditional access a break for 2 weeks because suddenly someone came out with a new build? And this is just the reality of running IT, right? Someone came out with a new build. You can't encrypt it yet because Intune can't accept it. There's maybe a 1 or 2 week lag. How do you address that as an IT org?
So how do we?
We haven't had that yet. We have the contingency policy in place. Luckily, our product teams are in fairly lockstep with the other teams outside of Microsoft with our partners, you know, because we partner very closely with iOS and Apple and all the other companies as well. It's not just a, you know, it's an IT ecosystem, right? We're not just a singular company up here. But we partner with them so we don't have to. But we have to have those plans in place as an IT org, you know, and I'm sure Eric doesn't like having to do that. He'll shake his head, absolutely no. But we do have to address those needs. From a conditional access.
I have a related question. What can be done to prevent specific vulnerable platforms from connecting to Microsoft corporate resources? Do we have a plan there?
Yeah. So in certain circumstances, we're able to target different OS versions of the platforms. And we would be able to, using conditional access, deny access.
So if there's an OS version mm-hmm. that's particularly vulnerable, we can turn it off and not give it access to our corporate resources.
Exactly.
Okay. Very good. That's good to know. Next question. How does Intune and MDM for Office 365 work on a device that is already managed by another MDM solution, like MobileIron?
That's simple. It doesn't.
Okay.
That's simple.
They're competing MDMs. And
yeah. Unfortunately, the reality is most platforms can only have one management provider on the device. So iOS, for example, you can only have one management provider. That's just
so you have to pick one.
The construct of the device. Now, that being said, we are working with a product team on how do we address that. So there are things like MDM-less policy that you can push, and that gets a little bit into that MAM policy. So, for example, you can have something managed actually by one platform, MobileIron or Good or AirWatch or whoever you're using. And then at the same time, if someone's accessing, say, an Office application and it's an Enlightened and you're using MAM policy, you can set the MAM policy in O365 on that specific application, and away you go. So you can kind of have the best of both worlds. One's at the application and one's managing the device and setting encryption.
So they can still get to the application. It's not managed by our Intune.
Correct.
But policy's been pushed so we feel comfortable allowing access.
Yeah, and think of that as kind of the integration of O365 and Intune and kind of those services to where you're actually managing it from the O365 console in conjunction with the Intune policy. So that's really some of the sweet spots with MAM, where you get back to the application layer and not necessarily just the device. Because you're right, some people want to do both, right? They want a standalone MDM, and yet they may have one or two applications that they want to restrict something on.
Very good. Next question. How does Microsoft IT manage the various accounts that users typically have, Microsoft account, Live ID, versus corporate accounts? Do you manage all of these accounts? And how does a user know which account to use and when on the same machine?
Yes. We manage all those accounts.
Let's have him
Yeah, and it can be particularly tricky. One of the first things we did when we went to the cloud was that we instructed all users to take their corporate account out of Live ID, and any stragglers that weren't, we ejected them. And so we put a policy in place that would not allow any at Microsoft.com to register at Live ID. So that way we got the clear delineation.
Kept it separate.
Ejected sounds so harsh.
Yes.
So we had that going on. People use their corporate login map to a Live ID.
Exactly. Okay. And so now you will find that pretty much the blanket rule that we say is that you use your corporate identity for anything related to work-related mm-hmm. items, and you would use a personal identity for anything that you would take with you after you leave the Microsoft. So
if don't you're sign up for those subscriptions with your
exactly.
Microsoft credentials, yeah. But also don't use your Microsoft credentials for those personal things
exactly.
as well.
People
okay.
would never do that. Not here.
Keep it completely separate.
Not here.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it is very difficult to do that, and then particularly in the browser-based applications, because with Internet Explorer, you get the integrated Windows logon in, so you wind up always logging in by default, if possible, with your corporate credential.
I've had that happen.
And then people are like, no, I want to go in as my Live ID, and you wind up having to do like a private session, or you have to sign out, and then explicitly sign back in, and so there's definitely work for identity providers to make that more friendly in the tools to be able to switch identities.
I love it when it comes up and says, which login do you want to use? Because then I can choose. It's
exactly.
when it defaults that it drives me crazy.
Right, and that's a result of a lot of the legacy applications.
And it's just trying to be helpful. I know it's trying to be helpful, but.
Exactly.
Okay, great. Thanks.
How do we deal with the testing scenarios in that, Jeff?
In the testing scenarios.
Because some of our customers are probably dealing with, you know, OneDrive or any of the things where they have personal end, right? And they have to test those. So how do we deal with the testing scenarios? Maybe people would want to hear about something like
right.
that.
Right. So the easiest way for our testers is what we'll do is we'll have them either go on to the MSFT Open, which puts them out on the open internet, and that would
MSFT
direct them.
MSFT Open is an open network we have on Microsoft.
Right, so that gives them direct internet access. In the old days, we used to do what we called direct taps or DTAPs,
okay.
which in your office would then allow you to have a direct connection to the internet, but you wouldn't have any connectivity back into CorpNet. Now we can do it wirelessly by using the MSFT Open, but by coming in through the internet, you won't get the integrated Windows logon because you're not on CorpNet anymore, you're on the internet.
True.
And that will always prompt you for a credential, and that would allow the tester to then test their application. And then we always go in private because that will keep any kind of session or persistent cookie from being used. And so you will always get prompted for a cred when you use the in private or incognito or one of those types of things. The other option, of course, is you go into your browser settings and dump all the cookies and clear all the history and settings. But that's kind of painful. Lots of people have their bookmarks and and cookies that they want to save other cookies because it's not really, you can't go selective and say, just get rid of this cookie, get rid of this cookie. It's an all or none type of proposition. So for testing, we found that that's the easiest way for our users is to test from the internet by getting onto a network where you won't be on the corporate network and then use the incognito in private type browsing function.
Cool. Okay, great, thanks. Next question. Let's go down to Arun. Arun, what is the most efficient way to identify which apps make the most sense for mobile scenarios?
Mm-hmm. Great question, actually. And this is a dichotomy many enterprises face when they want to when they want to lay out a plan of what really they want to be doing when they say, hey, we want to build a mobile app. When you think of a mobile app, you have to think of point scenarios. You don't want an app which is doing all sorts of things in that same form factor because it's a different form factor, the usage scenarios are different. So when we looked into our application portfolio and wanted to assess what are the best candidates initially, we tried to decompose existing applications into their single function and tried to delineate them under as individual independent apps by themselves. So one strategy we employ is ensuring there are point scenarios that are well accomplished in that small form factor.
So a mobile app is best to be one discrete activity, right?
Yeah.
Versus a monolithic.
Absolutely.
So you're looking for those most used.
Sure. Most used features and which can be easily addressed. For example, you are in a queue standing for your burger. You could just flip out your mobile device, look at a live tile, see there is a new notification. Hey, what's an immediate action that I need to take? Is it just an approval, like an accept reject, or do I have to add more context to it? So the additional context scenarios, you can backload it in the sense that you only those scenarios which you can really do it quickly is what we targeted for so that the usage grows, there is adoption, and then we would tackle the more challenging aspects of how do we handle if there is more context that needs to be provided to the action that you're taking.
Start simple.
Exactly. So that's one philosophy that we follow strictly. Start simple, get success out of the door first, and then add more capabilities that could be value adding for your customers in the sense.
And we still keep our mobile apps much simpler than we do like the
Absolutely.
Web apps.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. And that what that helps you do is also that your backend becomes much more scalable. When I say that, what I'm trying to say is your microservices can be powering your individual apps, and these microservices, the business logic within those microservices, can be also reused across a plethora of mobile apps, which might be relying on one of those capabilities, but maybe lighting up an entirely different scenario. So that aspect, keeping it simple, keeping it scalable, allows you to reach out to many people and also have a cadence within your development cycle wherein you can iterate and improve upon things that you have sent out. Flighting is one other important thing that we do when we publish our mobile apps. By that I mean that we have enough telemetry coming out so that we know that the app is really being used in the intended manner that we envisaged it would be used for.
And which parts of the app?
Exactly.
It gets down to which features that you've delivered are actually
True.
Used by the most people.
True. And that feedback loop helps us really help the customer succeed in by using that app and also ensure that our dollars are really spent in areas where there is value add. In the past, there used to be a tendency that an app would be constructed based on the whims and fancies. Not necessarily whims and fancies. It would be
cool
done
stuff.
With a certain... it would be done with a certain customer study that was done in a historic context. And by the time you release your application, the social structure or the social scenarios or the way the apps get used or the context gets changed. And so the study becomes irrelevant. So that's where telemetry...
So we built some stuff that wasn't used.
Absolutely. So... reducing wastage, absolutely.
We built a few of those.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, which I believe is the case in most enterprises too.
Absolutely.
I mean, you want to fail fast. I mean, failure is not necessarily an evil, but if you continue
you
on the failure,
that.
You
fail
that
fast and
exactly
learn.
Fail fast is the mantra, so to speak, that we follow. That's where telemetry and all of these mobile apps and services become very important, and we are big on that. Initially, Mike touched upon how we are becoming more data-driven. So our decisions now is not based on our emotional attachment to a certain feature, but whether our data proves that it really...
our customers find it valuable
exactly.
or not.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And that's been a big mind shift, but it is helping us in a big way as well.
Thank you. I'm going to go over to Charlie. So Charlie, how can I optimize support for both mobile and web app experiences in terms of effort, quality, and cost?
I mean, there's lots of different ways to approach it. I think that some of the, as an app owner and talking to other app teams and businesses, they always want to, they like this mobile scenario. They know that mobile is this big thing now and that people are, it's mobile first, cloud first at the company. And so, but the thing is, you know, they say they've built all this, they either have legacy code to being used today in a browser or something, or some sort of application they built in the past. And then they're like, well, now I have to spin up more code. I have to spin up
another.
Right. I have to either rewrite or I have to write for my mobile or mobile app that may not be, you know, that I can't expand to support my old customers who are not mobile first, mm-hmm. for example. And so, you know, how do you optimize? You know, I only have one team or one set of developers working here, and I don't want them trying to build a feature here, then here, then here. Just to
replicate it. Three
right.
ways, yeah.
Right. So, you know, and I think that, you know, with Windows 10, you know, Microsoft has provided a really great way for app owners and app teams to really optimize and make efficient use of the resources they have to we reach as wide a base of users as possible across a number of scenarios. One of the things our team leveraged was something we call this a hosted web app model, where we built a website, you know, that would be a website that was mobile first in the sense that it was a responsive website that could work on a mobile web or as well as a desktop and provide a similar an experience optimized for each.
Across all devices.
Right. And then for the mobile experience, what we could do is we could provide a value-added model. Basically, we take our website, package inside a Windows 10 app container, and then inside our web code, we could basically call Windows 10 APIs, give you those notifications on your phone, just like we were a native application. We could provide integration with pieces like Cortana inside the device as well. But that stays, all the code that powers it and the API calls that power it stays in the web, in our website code. So anytime we want to make a change to our website or we want to build in a new feature, it's as simple as putting it inside one set of code inside the web, which can be deployed on a browser or an app container, and then provide, you know, the same basic set of experiences, which is whatever the core competency of your application is. But at the same time, provide an added context-aware sort of experience based off what device or what mobile or any other sort of device you're on, touch, et cetera.
So you're writing one set of code, using it across mobile as well as the web app.
Absolutely. And that's a web-enabled scenario. I know a lot of teams tackle and use web because it allows them to basically, web is kind of the universal platform in ways. Mm-hmm. It allows you to touch every platform regardless of what's iOS or Google or Microsoft. But at the same time with Windows 10, the universal app model that we've provided now, so you can now write an app to basically touch on even, the HoloLens experience, the desktop experience, the mobile experience, and even Xbox. So with the universal app model in Windows 10, it's even easier if you want to just go the native app model as well.
Just to add on that, this app development cycle is not just restricted to the Windows 10 ecosystem. We are encroaching into territory wherein certain Microsoft IT apps also are being written natively for iOS, mm-hmm. targeting iOS and Android. With the Xamarin integration that the developers have access to now, they don't have to really rewrite those apps. They are having an easy path to write once and target these three platforms. And definitely, Windows 10 is our first front and center of our ecosystem mm-hmm. in terms of what we target first for. However, with the BYOD scenarios and the pressure that comes on, and also with the tool sets, development tool sets that we have access to now, enables us to target these multiple platforms also outside of Windows 10 effectively without having to write a whole lot of code there.
So we can get it onto those other platforms very simply.
Yes, okay. With minimal modifications effort to the code base that we have.
Right, it really is a much closer to the write once, run everywhere.
Absolutely.
Model.
Kind of like publishing into the platforms.
Well,
that's what I envision when I hear you describe
it. To their target, yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Whether you want to target your apps for your Apple device or your Android device, whether you want to target the Google Play or the Windows Store, you're writing once with your Xamarin tool sets, and they ensure that same code base. And you're also not maintaining three sets of code base. Okay. If at all, there is just a very thin layer of code base that is specific to that platform that you would be targeting. So that helps us target larger set of audience.
Across devices.
Absolutely.
That's great.
And both these guys touched on something that I think is really important from a philosophy standpoint that I think IT is embracing, which is we really used to kind of build everything for everyone, and now it's more like responsive is a great example.
Yes.
Everyone says, my app has to be totally responsive because everyone wants it on their mobile device. Mm-hmm. No. They want to do two or three things,
correct?
Like he mentioned,
absolutely.
On their mobile device. They don't want to do everything on their mobile device.
Yes.
They don't need to do everything on their mobile device. So don't build it to do everything on a phone.
Yep.
Build two or three capabilities in the phone and make it extensible. Mm-hmm. But then everything else, the underpinnings, make a more robust app. But
the more complex
don't make
in the app, the simpler task base.
And have the ability to stitch all those capabilities that you expose. That also comes down to designing your backend, and that's where cloud plays an important role. Mm-hmm. As long as you ensure that the monolith is not pushed up to the cloud, and instead you have had individual independent components that could be stitched together, depending on the scenario you're trying to light up, that saves a lot of pain, because you are using proven capabilities. If at all you are writing net new capabilities, that could be a combination of permutation or a combination of stitching of these individual ones in many cases.
And you're calling out that really mobility doesn't exist without the cloud.
Yes.
The cloud has to be there to connect the dots.
Absolutely. In a way, if you really want to reach the scale and have the desired impact of your mobile app, you definitely need to have a robust backend, and cloud definitely helps you exploit the whole plethora of scale, and and you don't really have to worry about the infrastructure that you would have to deploy in a geo-redundant whatnot, right? You'd have to think about geo-distribution because your users, mobility by the name itself as it implies, right, are not going to be tethered to a specific location. So you will have to have those services closer to them as they want their mobile applications to be usable.
Very good.
And they're not tethered to a specific mobile device. Absolutely. I think that's still a construct. People keep getting confused. Mobile doesn't mean I'm on a phone.
Absolutely.
Mobile means I'm at my grandma's house accessing my email and doing a finance application to submit my expense report because I'm in some other country. Mm-hmm. That's
maybe on your
mobility.
Grandmother's machine.
Yep. On your grandmother's machine.
Yep.
And hopefully
hard
not putting
imagine.
CA on it.
Exactly. That's an important point. It's your identity that gets carried away, carried through all the applications, irrespective of the device that you're using. And that's where the identity tool sets and aspects like that become very critical. Not necessarily
Absolutely.
Only the managed devices aspect, which is one part of it. Your AAD-driven identity becomes very crucial to ensuring that consistent experience and having the access
to it. We'll go next to Jonathan. Jonathan, how did the role of IT change for Microsoft as you moved to the cloud and saw a large increase in mobile clients?
Yeah, I get a lot of questions around that. I talk to a lot of CIOs, and they're like, "What's going to happen to my IT department when we go to the cloud and we have all this mobility stuff going on?" What it really does, when you talk about cloud and mobile, is it actually frees us up in MSIT to take on a whole different role now. So you kind of have to skill yourself differently, but you're going to be we basically raise up in the stack, and we can spend a lot more time talking to customers, talking to our internal people, and saying, what is it that you need from my services, especially when it comes to mobility, and really get closer to what their needs are, and then work with the product groups to make those things happen. So it really is it's a much more strategic approach to IT, whereas in the past, my teams would have been running around, patching, putting out fires. Now we can be a lot more focused on the strategic pieces of that and become a trusted advisor to our folks internally. That's the biggest change.
Sounds great. The next question follows along our earlier conversation. How do you handle situations where employees can have both a personal mobile phone and a corporate tablet? How can you write the conditional access that provides greater network access but more device restrictions for corporate devices without carrying over to personal devices, especially if policies are user group driven? I'm not sure where that goes.
It's a combination chain.
Yeah, it is kind of a combination.
It's a combination.
It depends, I guess, how you enroll the device could matter, and if you do. So if you...
So the customer gets to choose how they enroll.
Right, like for a corporate issued laptop, the traditional way that we've been managing those has been through domain join on premises and SCCM or configuration manager gets pushed down to it and that's how policy gets applied. That's kind of the traditional way. To relax that a little bit, if you have a mobile device, you know, it's your own personal PC, I mean, you can cloud join it, have an Intune policy applied to that, and you get the lighter weight policy. It'll enforce, if it's a PC, like a password and a screensaver policy. If it's a mobile handset, it's gonna be a PIN policy with encryption as well.
And if you
don't wanna have any of that, you can still access some of our cloud resources with some restrictions with no policy applied.
The Office 365 sign-in. How does an employee know what their options are? I have my own personal PC at home, or
we don't give people options.
is that true?
No. So the interesting thing is we actually in the product there's actually a delineation between calling it a corporate device and calling it a personal device. And when you do that, it opens up different management capabilities on the device. The reality is here at Microsoft internally, we do not designate devices as corporate-owned devices. So every mobile device that comes into our Intune management system is considered a personal device, period.
Even my corporate laptop?
It's considered, if you join it to Intune, it's considered a personal device.
Okay.
So we don't necessarily go to the asset level of tracking all these things. There's a lot of complications in what country you're from. It's ironic, but there's a lot of back-end processes that actually affect this. There's also a lot of privacy considerations for what's on the device. we don't necessarily want to inventory someone's personal device for everything that's on there. We don't want to be liable for that, just to be very frank. We don't want to know. Why should we? It's their device. That being said, if they're going to access resources, we'll apply the simple policy. So like Eric mentioned, we're going to require a PIN, we're going to require encryption, we're going to require locking the device. You know, we have the ability to wipe and do some things if needed. Granted, we don't do that hardly ever unless you lose the device and ask us to, but we have some additional capabilities. But essentially, we treat everything through the MDM stack as a personal device.
And, you know, something you said kind of resonated with me. We don't really think of it as corporate devices versus personal devices. We now look at it more managed and unmanaged. Because you can have a corporate device that's actually unmanaged.
Yeah.
Right? So if I'm joining NT domain, or the NT dev domain, that's an unmanaged device. But it could be that it's a corporate, that I've been issued it through the corporate. So it's really more managed versus unmanaged at this point.
Right. And this is where identity really comes into play. Because as it's often been touted by Alex Simons, the identity is the new control plane. Because now there's really no network borders anymore.
No.
The hard, crunchy exterior of the, you know, around the corporate intranet has quickly faded or become Swiss cheese with so many holes that you're pretty much on the internet. And so the identity both of the user and of the device then comes into play. And so we have a gradiated access model that we apply. And so if you are in a domain joined system center managed machine with your corporate identity, you get the highest level of access. You can VPN in, you have full access to the internal network, we know your machine's managed, you've got group policy, et cetera. Now, if you go down to a retailer and you buy a PC for your own personal use, you can bring it in and you can plug it in on the corporate network, but you're not gonna be able to get to very many corporate resources because you won't be able to complete the machine auth. You won't have an identity for your machine. And then you can take it to the next level and use either the Intune MDM and get the MDM policy applied to your personal device, or you could do the Azure domain join where there's no group policy, but you get lightly managed, as Eric mentioned. And so now there's an identity and we can tie your corporate user identity to that particular device. And so now we can say at least this was a device used by Jeff to access this. And so now you can get a little more access, say maybe your remote desktop gateway to access some certain assets or hit the Azure application proxy to access an internal application from the internet from a lightly managed device. And so that's the way that
that's
we really
kind of
think
the
of identity.
Of the conditional, right? Based on your machine,
right, yeah.
Known it's, or unknown, managed or unmanaged, and you, known or unknown.
Yes, at a per application level.
Right.
So really the conditional access is exactly what it says. Conditional based on a huge list of conditions.
Kind of a matrix.
That you can, yes, it can be on the device, the health of the device, the application, the user, what the application is, what's the data behind it.
And one of those aspects, just so everyone, you know, kind of understands, one of the things that we're struggling with internally is, you know, Jeff touched on several scenarios, right? Domain joined, AAD, Intune, MDM, et cetera. We also have this other area that I'd say internally we're struggling with as an IT department is, what do you do with those people who have to test in those scenarios that are completely off the grid, but yet they need access to services? So like they come to Jonathan and say, Jonathan, I need SharePoint and all these collaboration services, but by the way, I'm in a research or development scenario, and so this device can't be managed, I can't do testing on it, but I want access to my services. What do you do? It's a hard conversation, mm-hmm. right? How do you, so that's something internally that we're struggling with is how do we extend some of those management capabilities? And a lot of these are new product feature roadmap things because the products themselves, it's like, well, they're not really designed. But if you take any development shop, call it Amazon, call it Google, call it Intel, call it Microsoft, call it Android, any of them. If you're developing, you're in that scenario every day with, say, 100,000 research devices that still need access to all these corporate resources, but they don't really want to be managed. Mm-hmm. But if you lock it down with conditional access, you lock it down with policy.
Also, multi-factor authentication.
Yeah, multi-factor auth that comes into play.
Yeah, we definitely have seen this with our Wi-Fi policies. and being able to grant access to like Internet of Things type of devices that can't be managed. How do they get access to
the Wi-Fi?
They
will be managed. We're working on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's coming.
Some, you know, if you got your refrigerator that you don't,
I know,
you're gonna want to manage your refrigerator, and it needs to be on the Wi-Fi network. Yeah. How are we able to grant them connectivity to the internet at the same time as is protecting our corporate network? And so these are some of these struggles that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And some of the answers are creating additional network access. You know, we talked about our Microsoft Open Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. you know, granting access to these devices to open Wi-Fi, and then that way they can...
Or anybody, in visitors
right.
even.
And so
an
unmanaged
anyway.
An unmanaged system can still get Wi-Fi access. But then it also presents more questions for countries and jurisdictions that require authentication for internet access. And, you know, what do we do for those jurisdictions? And we're still dealing with these questions, but you know, it's a balance between enabling our research and development organizations and
protecting,
you know, keep protecting our assets.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, how do we do that and make it easy for the users? Our users are no different. If we make it too hard, they'll find another solution. We got some pretty, you know, inventive people here.
People will get their work done.
So it's that fine line. And you walk a fine line. It's really hard to protect your corporate assets while making it easy for people to get their jobs done. That's a pretty tough, you know, line to walk.
Mm-hmm. And one of the areas we're even seeing that I think some people probably externally will see is when you think about these IoT situations, we're seeing a lot where the application layers, so these guys keep wanting to build stuff that it's IoT integrated.
Yeah,
our real estate and facilities people are becoming notorious for this now. And yet they have all these IoT devices out there collecting data.
In conference rooms.
In conference rooms,
is anybody
in hallways,
there?
You know, turning on the lights, accessing notes for the meeting. So they want to do all these cool and new things with IoT devices, and yet you have a management construct that you're like, wait, that's accessing corporate data. And is that any privacy data or PII data? Or, you know, and so to me, that's kind of the next, I don't know, the next model of the future that really that's the tough thing we have to figure out is how do we address that Internet of Things when, you know, you throw a headless device out there and all of a sudden it has to be managed. You want policy on it, and yet anyone can walk into the room and take it off the ceiling and pull it down and walk away with it.
True.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to figure out what to do with those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how man works with technology versus the man versus technology thing comes into play. Yeah.
And technology is getting more and more invisible these
days.
Yep. You don't even know how much technology you're around.
Yeah.
To expand upon a couple of points we've already hit upon, how do we handle lost or stolen devices, and how do we remove corporate data using selective wipe? Is that
either way? That's actually a really simple one. So, while we have the ability to wipe a device through EAS policy, which we've had for a long time, Intune has the selective wipe capability. So, through their Intune portal, a user themselves can go in and actually selective wipe all the corporate data. That function is available to all our users today. Hardly
and
used.
Can they do, but it won't touch their personal data?
No, it won't touch their personal data.
They
it
have
only does
to
the selective stuff that's installed through Intune. So only the Intune policies and the Intune, say, applications they've installed through our service. Everything else is the same.
So if it's a stolen device, they have to handle their personal in a different way.
So their stolen device, the good thing is because we have EAS and exchange policy on there, we actually can, and if a person calls our support desk and says, hey, I just lost my phone, can you issue a remote wipe? We can actually do that, and we do.
The whole phone?
The whole phone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we can do it, but we use that's a user-driven activity.
They
so we don't personally go out and say, hey, mm-hmm. we're just going to wipe a person's. So if you leave the company, for example, yes, the data is going to be gone once you're out of the company and can't authenticate. You know, that data will be gone from your device, but that's all we're going to touch is the corporate stuff. One of the big values of Intune.
And we've talked a lot about non-Windows devices in the mobile setting. What is the user experience for iOS or Android user?
Depends on what you're accessing.
Okay.
If you're getting on wireless, we've touched on that, for example. Mm-hmm. Wireless is really simple. Join Intune, we provide the certificate. Now, if you're on a Mac, It's a little harder than that, just because the way the operating system works with the protocols and such. But we do have the process in place for people on Macs. We have a lot of people working on Macs here. We have an entire Mac business unit that is all Mac, that builds the Office products, et cetera. Skype, Yammer, several of the other online communities are very heavily Mac shops. So we provide the services just like anything else. Sometimes it's a little challenging, because just the way that that operating system integrates with how you get a certificate on the device. Android is a great example. When you're enrolling a device into Intune and you're getting the certificates on iOS, on Android, it goes through like a 15-step process. That's not
that
something
sounds
we
like
control.
A lot.
It is. It's too much. The product team's working on it. Hopefully we'll get that solved very soon here. But there's a lot of that stuff that we can't control, and we're working with the other OEMs and manufacturers and groups to solve those harder
Make
challenges.
It easier.
Yeah.
But there's a series, like, for example, our application, there's certain other applications, like Office applications specifically, where it's actually, it's basically almost just a two-factor is a key. That's all they have.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do. And
yep.
Basically, if you two-factor, you can get into certain.
And the experience is the same.
So on
that.
The application level, it's a lot more simplified.
Yeah.
It's
yes.
really
much more.
You know, the user experience really becomes jarring when you're talking of the device getting into your corporate access and things like that. From an application point, like earlier it was mentioned, right, the identity is your control plane and the rest just gets tagged along with that, with your content and aspects like that.
Okay, great. I am seeing that we're getting close to the end of the hour, and I want to make sure that our SMEs have an opportunity to answer one final question. So this is a question I want to pose to all of you guys. You've worked with mobile solutions for a while now. What is the one tip you want to leave our customers with today? And we'll start with Charlie, but before he answers that, while they're thinking about their tip, I would like to encourage you to answer a couple of questions for us. We'd love your feedback. We'd love to know what you think about these sessions. So please take a moment and answer a couple of questions for us. And with that, Charlie, how about you start?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big proliferation of mobile devices in our world today. And, you know, everything's moving to mobile in the consumer space and even in the enterprise space, especially with BYOD, bring your own device. So, you know, I mean, the thing as an application owner we think about a lot is when we think of new applications, it's always the thinking with that mobile mindset first. Building that flexible infrastructure and architecture so that you can serve the simplified needs of a mobile device, while at the same time being able to expand using the same infrastructure and same set of architecture you've built to support more robust scenarios on larger non-mobile devices, for example. And then if you're serving a legacy device, a legacy application, you know, the whole point is how can you decouple certain pieces of that legacy application that might make a great mobile experience and bring that specifically to mobile so you can reduce the amount of work. You know, you don't have to rewrite an entire application and try to figure out how to bring something that's 15 years old to, you know, an Android device or an iOS device. So, I mean, there's two different approaches, but, you know, the focus is to think mobile, is to think in mobile scenarios first and then build and then go up from there in terms of capabilities.
Okay, thank you.
To build on a little of what Charlie's talking about, I would say focus on the mobile experience. It's not about the device. Just when you're building services, when you're looking at how you're running IT, when you're looking at extending everything from wireless to certificates to access to management to applications, think of the experience as the mobile experience, not the mobile device. That has to be key. A lot of people they continually think, oh, it's your phone. No, it's not your phone. It's like we've talked about. It's limited on the phone, but it's device specific. And so remember that when you're trying to build out the services and not only build them out, but provide them, because not everyone needs everything on every device. That's just the way things are going to go.
Yeah, I think as people approach mobility, that probably the most important thing for IT departments to think about is as identity becomes that new control plane, strong authentication, is multi-factor authentication. Username and password just doesn't cut it anymore in today's world. And so I think as you move into the mobility, it's not optional anymore. Anybody who's not using multi-factor authentication is just like got a big bullseye on their back.
They're at risk.
Yes, and so I would highly encourage everyone moving into that mobile space. There's a ton of options now with authenticator apps on the phone. Smart cards, obviously smart cards aren't gonna work with mobile devices, and so we used that early on in the early 2000s for our multi-factor authentication, getting remote access into the network. But now with the explosion of devices, most of the devices are smaller than a smart card now. So moving to the phone authentication or token, one-time passwords, any of those types of options will help to defeat, because the technology now is so easy. Password, dictionary attacks, the just the sheer compute horsepower now, the ability for the tools are just readily available to, and along with the sophisticated spear phishing, it's so easy for passwords to be compromised. Even when a knowledgeable user is on the lookout for it, it's so easy to just accidentally make that one click and then.
That's all she wrote.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff. Jonathan.
Oh, boy, that's a pretty broad question, but I guess from my perspective, my big tip is whether you're going to the cloud now or in the future or you're already partway there, plan for the cloud. Plan for mobility. It's not a fad. I think you would all agree it's not going away. It's going to be here. So keep that mindset. Even like I said, even if you're only planning on going to the cloud in the future, when you develop applications today for things like SharePoint, develop them from the cloud perspective. You can actually put applications in Azure and still have them consume services that are on-prem. So start thinking about that. I think Mike really nailed it when he said it's about the user experience and not about the device. And you know, even internally when we do these surveys every year for IT services. And we've kind of flipped it from very service specific, like how's your search experience, instead of now we're talking about experiences. What's your experience trying to find documents that you need to get to? So it's kind of, we're thinking more along the lines of experiences now instead of technologies and devices. But plan for the cloud now, and you'll be ahead of the game when you actually get there.
Eric.
All right, so my takeaway, I said before, is to use and plan for conditional access. So it's a more complex access model where you're taking device management and health and its status of that, combined with user access, like Jeff was talking, multi-factor authentication, and then that becomes what grants you access to the resources in the cloud. So planning for that more complex model that's necessary in the cloud.
That's how you service everything and everybody. Everybody doesn't get the same level. Mm-hmm. So, great. Thank you.
So I think two things that you need to keep in focus, I would talk from a developer perspective, because most enterprises would have development organizations, is that when you think about mobility and the new era, so to speak, user experience is not going to be as static as it used to be in the past. For example, the form factors and the experiences themselves keep changing. For example, inking technology and whatnot. So that means that your developers need an environment wherein they're agile enough to take advantage of all these incoming technologies, and cloud really provides you one way of ensuring at least your services remain agile and you're not worrying about the infrastructure. The other part is really about making data-driven decisions around your user experiences and not just sticking with emotional ideas, and prove them with data, and then that way your app would be more successful and more useful in the broader ecosystem.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you all. It's time for us to wrap up, and I do want to thank all of our SMEs for taking time away from your day job to come talk to our customers. It's very valuable that you do this. And I want to thank our customers. We really enjoy the dialogue and the questions and the opportunity to talk to you about how Microsoft does IT. We will post this video on our website, microsoft.com/IT Showcase, and you will see future events future SME roundtables and other webinars on other topics, as well as a rich set of data, technical case studies, articles, other videos, productivity guides on that site to help you with Microsoft technology, to tell you how Microsoft does IT. And with that, thank you and have a great day.
Have a good one.
Thank you.